Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream Podcast,
where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media.
I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Hello, everyone. This is Mario Carrasco, your host in the New Mainstream Podcast. Excited for our esteemed guest today, Michael Novisky, the Director of Global Insights at Visa. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here today. Thank you for hosting me.
And I didn't ask you before the call, but did I get your last name correct?
It's okay. It's Michael Nevsky, but it's good. You were very close.
All right. Michael, so I, you know, researching, you have one of the most impressive resumes that in our from our guests that we've had in the past. So really excited to chat with you today. But before we dive into your work, share a little bit about your journey. We talked a little bit in our pre-call about your journey, but would love to know a little bit about your background, how you got into consumer data. Please share with us how you got into the insights industry.
Absolutely. Historically, I started in marketing and strategy, but I've always was curious about how consumers think and why they do what they do. And eventually, in my career, I worked for the large manufacturing firm, size of GE, Fortune 200. And at that time, I was assisting product management with direct marketing activities. And I took this class on voice of the customer back, it was, 15 years ago or so, and really learn on how to conduct qualitative interviews, how to actually create a discussion guide, and how to avoid interviewer bias versus interview bias. And I got into this kind of a semantics of understanding, even on the B2B side, of consumer people's mindset, and realizing that very often people say one thing, but in actuality do the other. And that's what led me to really realizing that market research or insights, whatever you call it, so really is being a very strategic function within each corporation, each company, because it identifies the white space and identifies the path how to cross that chasm and strategic direction, those actionable insights for companies to grow, to bring better products and innovate, and to bring better experiences for their clients. And that's how I transitioned to marketing research or market research or client insights. And the rest of it is the history. So one thing I want to say that I was very lucky in my career in the last almost 30 years doing this, that I changed the verticals. So that means from financial services to manufacturing to software to CPG and retail, syndicated data, panel and point of sales, and back to payments. So very lucky to work in different verticals, not necessarily even companies, to really understanding and looking from not only inside out, but from outside in. And that perspective helps me knowledge from other industries.
And a couple of questions from that. So you mentioned a little bit, you took up that voice of consumer class. Is that what really, is that what started you think about this centering the consumer, this consumer-centric approach? Would you say that class is what really got you thinking about that, or were you already doing that in your marketing space?
It was the beginning, voice of the customer, client, right? VOC, or voice of the client, customer. So working in marketing and brand management, you always work with research, especially on the retail side, where I was in financial services. You are trying to understand your investors or clients, retail clients. So, and that understanding and realization that it needs to be, it was always there in terms of kind of a common understanding and approach. But really, you're absolutely right. The VOC class I took, it really made me think that it needs to be very much centered around the consumer, centered around the user, right? Because we know human-centered design nowadays, if we're talking about the UX, UI design. So And it was that huge impetus for me to start thinking that really I need a transition to that area, not needed, but I really have a passion and interest and curiosity. So, and really focus on consumer or business client for that matter, because again, I work in several industries, B2B, B2C, and B2B2C. So, and having that understanding helped me to succeed in my career later on.
And I think also one thing that I see that differentiates you that I feel like our industry is lacking sometimes is connecting the data and insights to dollars, right? Like I like research just because I like finding cool insights, interesting things. But at the end of the day, if it's not driving revenue growth, it's not necessarily useful. How have you kept that front of mind in your career? Like, because I know that's an important facet. I know that's an important thing to you.
Absolutely. And what helped me, my experience in marketing and brand management initially, because very often insights would come and say, hey, we identified something. This is nice to know about this generation. That's what they're doing. But where is the real connection? How this insight going to help me as a marketer to conduct more successful campaign or more effective campaign in terms of the conversions, growing bottom line, retain clients, bring new business. It needs to be very actionable and relevant to companies' goals and mission and challenges, but also it needs to accomplish sometimes tactical level success where marketing or product is working on some initiatives or trying to identify those white spaces where they can grow and come up with that solution or come up with that actionable insight is vitally important. So when I transitioned to marketing research, I always focused not on nice to know, but what it means for you, Mr. Internal Client or Mrs. Internal Client, how we can action out these results in your actual work and how it's going to help you. So that means, what are you trying to accomplish as my business partner? What company is trying to accomplish? What are the biggest challenges and opportunities? So you need to really be proactive partner as a researcher and build that way relationship that you actually bring in value to the table and having a seat at the table instead of being perceived as a cost center. Yeah, this is the research department. They do some surveys, satisfaction, blah, 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 and measure, for example, NPS over and over again. But what's the actionable insight from that NPS besides that it dropped because we did not have an automated password set up, right? So the conclusion, we need to actually set up the system, and I'm giving actual example from my experience, where people can automatically set up the password without interacting with anybody. And that will improve their experience, improve their satisfaction, and it will influence their retention. And then measure what was before in terms of the retention versus now and identify that improvement, if any, and show that because of that, we improve the bottom line because that customer lifetime value increased by X, Y, and Z dollars or percentages. And it's good for our customers because they're getting better service and it's great for the company as well. So. And that's how I approach those.
No, I love that because I don't think we've had someone mention before, you know, getting a seat at that table, right? The insights industry is kind of going through a crisis now, right? With AI and respondents. And I think we can all learn something from that, making sure that we're connecting it to business objectives, which is great. And I think this is a good transition to the next thing I wanted to talk to you about. Like you mentioned, you've been able to go into vastly different verticals and be successful. And I know one of the things that you've done is you're especially known for turning around underperforming brands. It sounds like these are one of the strategies you take, but can you walk us through, like, what have you done? And you know, what was your approach in turning around these underperforming brands for them to be successful from a research perspective, from a technology perspective? How have you reached that growth?
Sure. That's more of a kind of marketing question, but let's focus on the research portion of that. So in my experience, where I identified those pain points, where we losing our competition, where we losing in terms of maybe service quality, pricing, right? So functionality of the product. So then you start focusing on those areas to understand where's the gap, what are we lacking, and insights needs to cover for that or bring that actionable insight. Again, I keep repeating that word being redundant a little bit, really to understand, okay, if it's about a customer retention or if it's about a customer acquisition or it's about a product or maybe pricing, right? So like nowadays, some quick service restaurants trying to explore dynamic pricing, for example. So build a roadmap and go-to-market strategy, and then identify where market research or insights function can bring those or cover for those gaps and bring those actionable insights that provide the direction for marketing, product development, operations, service, where we're lacking that, and focus on those areas to improve. And then you measure, test, and iterate in a sense. It's almost like a springs approach, right? Like a 2-week spring, 3-week spring, right? So you focus on those incremental small improvements, and that's how you turn it around. You're just not going to come in and assess the situation and say, okay, let's just shut down this product line because it doesn't work. Impossible. It's possible. But you start breaking down into those little points in a sense of journey mapping, whether it's a path to purchase journey or usage journeys, and understand where are those pain points for your customers, for your market, where your competition is. It's a very comprehensive approach. And again, market research needs to be very strategic partner, really not just taking an order, but really be proactive and suggesting this is how we can approach that to extract those insights to help turn around this failing brand or this failing product.
One thing I'm getting from you that that I think is missing in our industry, right, is you have a big picture sense of the business, of the brand, of the product portfolio. How did you come up with that? How did you gain those skills to have that view, that business perspective view? Like, and I'm asking you because a lot of our listeners are in the inside space and want that, right? Like, what did you do to actively seek out to have that bigger picture view from a business perspective?
That's a very good question. It goes back to that natural curiosity, right? Although they say curiosity kill the cat, but same time, when you really do it in the right way, not overburdening and utilizing self-directed resources. And sometimes, yes, you cannot teach some of it. That's why us as researchers and yourself, we naturally curious creatures, right? So we really love to learn about human, about the different industries. And to me, a few aspects of that, self-directed, educational and learning, like reading articles. I read lots of stuff on my industry, on type of, let's say payments or type of clients on the business side or consumer trends, but it's also utilizing internal resources, if any educational classes or anything like that, and talking to business partners, but not in an overburdening way, but really in terms of the learning. I'm curious about this area you're working in, right? So where can I get the materials? What can I do on my own? And maybe something you can educate me on, so you can set up the short meeting and stuff like that. But it also looking at the bigger picture, to your point, understanding the market overall, understanding your competition, what is going on in your industry, who is doing what. This one, it's, again, natural curiosity. You need to learn that on your own very often. So use your network outside of the company, within the company, and really try to build that picture puzzle, to your point, because very often us researchers, we focus on the task at hand. I'm very good about quant and qual, for example, and I just, with all day long, I manage those projects, I help my business partners, I work with I'm assigned to this particular vertical within my company, for example, or two verticals, and I'm supporting that. But you need to really see what is going on outside of your small, like that isolated world, I would say. And also see if you can actually, if it's a larger team, you work on several verticals within the company. I mean, see if you can expand that rotation, work in the different departments within research, right? Supporting different clients, internal clients, I mean, right? Where you can be exposed to a different type of business, right? So like from my previous experience with Schwab, where I work on, let's say, advisory services versus retail investors, but then I wanted to learn more about active traders versus managed accounts and advice versus institutional clients. And you get an opportunity to learn about that and really understand more comprehensively, because those corporations, they're very complicated businesses nowadays, right? So learning about all the aspects of their business is very, very challenging, because it's a lot of information, but also learning about the industry. And it's all together comes when with time, when you continue being naturally curious, but not overburning again, not overstepping, and really see where the opportunities for you to learn, to get experience, and to contribute and support.
I like that. I like that advice, right? Harness the natural curiosity that we have as researchers to look outside of your role, right? One, just your industry at large. Two, I think macroeconomic, and I love that you mentioned the dynamic pricing happening in quick service and fast food. For those that don't know, I think it was Wendy's that's experimenting with that, right? This is off topic, but I find it so fascinating. What's your opinion on that? Have they actually done it? Have they actually implemented the dynamic pricing, or was this just something that they threw to the news, like that they were thinking about doing?
And I see that you're also naturally curious, right? Since you know the latest development. So my understanding, they're going to utilize the electronic tableaus and stuff. So, and some other players already looking at that. And they're going to experiment. They just announced that, right? So to me, they're testing the waters. But in a sense, jury is still out, because we need to understand whether consumers are ready to pay. In a sense, extra, it's like airline tickets pretty much when it's a rush hour and everybody's in line. So they might pump up the price by a little bit, right? And see if there is more demand, higher price, right? And then like maybe late afternoon when there is lower traffic, like with Starbucks, right? And they're trying to drive traffic into the physical stores and they offer some couponing, they might drop the prices, right? So to really drive that kind of revenue per store, in a sense. So, and to me, that's the new era, especially in restaurant and QSR, casual dining, right? So in some other areas where they're going to actually test that more and see if they can create incremental revenue. But again, we need to see, jury is still out, how it's going to affect the client experience, in a sense, and consumer attitude towards that I'm overcharged during the rush hour because I'm hungry and I want to have that burger, right? So it's a very interesting area to test. Same time, one more thing I want to say, that I'm curious how even generative AI, and I quote and purpose generative AI, because of course everybody knows by actual name ChatGPT, and in the future probably like with Kleenex, right? So versus like that napkin, say, in a sense, people are going to call any generative AI or ChatGPT, although there is a Copilot and some others in BART, right? So by multiple players. But I'm curious because I see more and more of application of generative AI in our work, in mine and yours. And I'm curious if it's going to help here to actually bring that experience, because once companies start identifying more who is buying, right? They know that it's Michael who actually came back and they offer me dynamic pricing, but knowing and understanding my attitude or perception of that, they might adjust that and have more even a personalization, a custom personalization specific for me. Maybe it's not going to be $1.90 like for everybody else when regular price $1.50, but maybe they're going to offer me something special $1.80, right? And I feel a little bit better because I'm appreciated repeat customer, right? So something like that. So again, it's a very interesting area which is developing right in front of our eyes right now. So.
Yeah, no, I was, you know, I've been following it, and you know, there was huge pushback, and it reminds me, I don't know if you remember, this was maybe last year, that AMC theaters threw out this idea of the tiered pricing in the movie theater, like first class, and you know, kind of like the airline model, and that there was such big backlash there that I think they stepped away from that. So companies have been thinking about it. Of course, I think of Uber, right? Kind of pioneered surge pricing. So that, yeah, it will be really, really interesting how that evolves.
And I just want to mention on that real quick. So not the scenario where they're going to have maybe extra window, right? So you don't want to be in the line during the rush hour. So instead of $1.50, pay $2 and just go straight, get your burger, and off you go. So that's another one you're getting cut in line, right? Pretty much officially. Yeah. So maybe give me some, like in one of my presentations, I talk about price value, right? So give me some value. If there's an inflation and a price increases, right? Give me something in return that I feel that I'm really getting the value from you as a brand. So it could be one of those examples. So yeah.
No, yeah, and then I like how you take it a step further about the generative AI, right? It's not one size fits all in terms of the pricing. It's specific to your habits and incenting you to go at a time you usually don't go, right?
Right, right. You're absolutely right.
No, that's interesting. And so tell us more. So tell us more about your role. I'm sure it actually involves thinking about things like this, right? Because even though it's QSR, that dynamic pricing points to bigger macroeconomic shifts that are happening. So tell us more about your role at Visa. I know you work with the chief economist there. Yeah, would love to delve more into your role.
Thank you. Yes. My role is a very, very interesting one. In my work, I actually focus on overall thought leadership in terms of consumers and their mindset and their desire, ability to travel cross border and spend, to overall spending, discretionary or non-discretionary spend, really attitude towards the future, planning, right? So it's more outward focused than inside focused on the brand itself. And my goal is to enrich economic forecast, because I'm not an economist and my background is in marketing and market research. I never been an economist, but I respect them very much. And I love what I do. Don't take me wrong. I will never become an economist, although I never say never. But my focus is on what I love most, insights. So my goal is to really enrich their analysis of a domestic and international economic situation, what it means for consumers and what it means for my clients. So, and that's the actual clients, the business clients. So that's actually the focus on my day-to-day work. And in that, throughout that work, I actually try to identify new trends in terms of consumers, not only spending, but also in terms of demographics. And let's say, my team identified that for the next 12 years, the primary growth is going to come from Gen Z. But I also identify some areas where consumers, for example, demographically, new segments of the market. Let's say it's not necessarily age and income, but it's also how people live. And what we observe, what I observe in my work, that more and more people living alone, so they become single-person household, right? Who actually change their lifestyle because of that. And different reasons, because younger people focus on careers, or maybe they feel that it's not the right time to create a family because so many disruptions in the world. Also in the United States, boomers and silent generation, they live longer. And so spouses outlive their spouses, right? So that means more elderly, older people living alone because of that. So all those factors influence how people spend, how people live, where people live, and how they travel, and how they actually use products and services. Because then you need to, as a brand, if it's your manufacturing or CPG or financial services, start thinking, I need to design products and services specifically tailored to a single person household, because you're living on your own, and maybe you need be able or need the assistance in a sense, for example, to utilize product services on your own, like furniture, moving around, and there are even tools nowadays which helps you to move a couch by yourself because you don't have anybody else in your household to help you with that task. So stuff like that. So that's kind of a nature of my day-to-day research where I focus. I also focus on trends like ESG, some people called, or what one of my colleagues from Kantar, Jay Walker, talks about, confrontational consumerism, where consumers treat companies and brands and loyalty based on companies' approach to society. This global Gen Z phenomena of being part of something good, something better, is now spreading all over the generations, and especially in the United States and Canada, where consumers expecting brands being the catalyst for positive societal change, and they treat them as such. That means they would rather buy products from companies which contributes to grassroots communities, or doing something for nonprofits, or doing something for environment, for climate change and stuff like that, rather than companies who will just offer me a lower priced product, right? So it's not necessary, again, price reward. It's also, what are you doing for the society as a brand? So stuff like that. Hopefully I'll give you enough examples of what I'm doing.
That's cool. And I want to summarize, and correct me if I'm wrong, your role on a high level, right? When I think of economists, they're just looking at us like a big macro group. And it sounds like your role, you're connecting it down to the person, right? If the economist is giving us trends, it's like, what's happening? You're there to connect. Why? Okay. What's the impact on this person? Is that correct?
Absolutely. What does it mean, inflation, right? For consumers, especially in the US, if we make it close to home versus some other region. And in the US, and we see that historically, again, from secondary sources, if you look at the perception versus reality, if you look at the CPI index, which is a consumer price index, versus consumer perception of inflation, perception is always higher. So that means even right now, inflation is subsiding, but people still feel that it's very expensive to go to grocery aisle and fill my refrigerator and get the food on the table. So that means they're still cautious in terms of their spending, still pulling back to private label brands and stuff like that. So we're not yet out of the woods, because it takes much longer for consumers to readjust their behavior to going back to spending versus when inflation is high and we quickly adjust and being thrifty and cutting down in so many areas of our lives, right? So, but going back takes time. And that's where we're right now in terms of consumer mindset. That's one of the examples to answer your question.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned, you know, generation, you mentioned Gen Z, you know, one thing our company focuses on, right, is multicultural, and thinking about Gen Z, they're the most diverse generation in our nation's history. Depending on how you look at it, it's actually the first minority majority generation, right? Like where you have more Latino, Black, Asian consumers. Tell us how that aspect, and that's connected to your other work, right? ESG, part of that, Gen Z, much more environmentally focused, much more passionate about issues about diversity and inclusion. Tell us about how that has shaped your role and how you think about it, or some trends that you're seeing with regards to that changing demographic from an ethnicity perspective.
Yeah, that's a very good question, although we're not exploring a lot in financial services in terms of the ethnic segmentation, as you know, for the reason of some policies and procedures and rules. But right. What's interesting here, actually, that Gen Z, to your point, it's a true digital and native generation, although many people say, what about millennials? Definitely, but they've been exposed to that kind of a digital aspect a little bit later in life. That's why we call it, that's why I call it, it's my personal opinion, that Gen Z is a true digital and native versus millennial who digital and native, right? So, yeah. But same time, what I observe, Mario, that Gen Z, And I, because I do kind of somewhat global research as well, while the most diverse generation, absolutely, but they're so, in a sense, similar in terms of their habits and in terms of their understanding of the world across many regions. Let's say we jump across the pond, right? Western European countries versus US and Canada, Gen Zers, because they're so diverse, but same time, they look at many aspects of their life very, very similar in terms of the diversity and accepting, being much more acceptable and comprehensive for like different ethnicities, different diversities, digital lifestyles, right? Travel, so focusing on experiences. So it's so much similarity. Sometimes you feel like it doesn't matter what language you speak and what origin and what color of your skin. If you're Gen Z, pretty much the very, not monolith, right? But they think alike, they act alike. So it's very, how do you say, on one hand, it's somewhat challenging as us researchers to research, but same time, you probably see it in your work, especially when you work with Latinos and stuff. So they're very similar to other ethnic Gen Z groups, because this is the young generation, which I truly believe going to change the world for the better, to be honest with you, because they have that global perspective and also local grassroots perspective, and they treat everybody right and inclusive. So that's my hope for the world, actually. Gen Z is gonna save us all. So
my last conversation with I was talking with a colleague of mine, Kai Fuentes. She owns a market research company based out of New York, and we were talking about we work with Gen Z and interviewing them, and they're just so bold in the type of questions they ask, right? Like when you're in, when I was interviewing for jobs, I was just always trying to appease the person that's interviewing and get, Gen Z doesn't care. They'll ask you the tough questions. If they don't like something, they'll say it. And yeah, that's great to hear. You're seeing that on a global level. And actually this is a good segue. Talk about, It's great. You have this global perspective. How is that? What are some of the challenges? What are some of the opportunities you see in the industry from your perspective as someone that manages multiple vendors? Like, what is that like for you? What are some challenges and opportunities that you see there?
And you're talking about from market research perspective, consumer perspective, market research. Yeah. So no, first and foremost, government regulations, right? GDPR, research policies, privacy, how you approach storing the data, because in different countries, let's say in the Middle East, CMEA, so-called, there are countries where you cannot store the data in the cloud, right? So if it's research data, it must be on a hard drive pretty much, or like GDPR in Europe, the what kind of data you can utilize, especially with third-party data versus primary-party data. Second one, probably this aspect of really understanding comprehensively and seeing beyond just your country or region. So especially with global vendors, suppliers, to your point, if you're asking market research firms, there are global conglomerates which can actually accommodate in market and connect that back to global and regional. And some players, they just focus on certain aspects of research, quant, qual, maybe digital, maybe user experience. So I think building that comprehensive solution and also understanding how generative AI, back to that one, is going to affect our business. Another example to give you, synthetic panel, which there is a big talk on the street right now, right? So that I can run quick and dirty research by modeled synthetic panel by Gen AI and kind of model questions and not questions, answers from a lookalike audience by Gen AI. And I say, okay, we're not going to go into this country right now and do more expensive and lengthy research, but we can get just a temperature measure, the temperature field for that country, and based on that assumption, on those assumptions, build something and move quickly. So those aspects probably, and how Gen AI is going to affect work on a global scale, plus government regulations, authority regulations, how they're going to evolve for and allow us to be effective and efficient in our research to support our brands and support our consumers and customers. So those are major challenges for me, and how we would overcome them successfully. Then we will be able to continue our success of being that strategic business partner to our business or businesses.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up AI and synthetic panels. Like, what's your personal take on it? This leads up to the next question I was going to ask you, like, what, you know, how do you see the future of the industry? Do you see this synthetic panel, synthetic samples being a viable solution for market researchers, for insights professionals like yourself? Is that something that you're thinking about and potentially using? And if not, probably, what are some other things?
Yeah, probably yes, and I explained. But again, proof is in eating, right? Like without pudding. So, I was at a conference recently, and the eternal question of doing more with less. We all know that, especially on the client side and even the supplier side, we've always been asked, how can we do more with the whatever resources we have, or even reduced resources, and how we can be nimble and efficient and get something on a dime quickly. So a synthetic panel will enable us to actually do something like that, because you will have a speed to market. You will be able to accomplish that faster. And it will require less budgets to do that, because you can pretty much run it within 10 minutes, something created a survey, and then run that by synthetic panel, and then get those hypotheses addressed. The same time, the downside of that, half glass empty, half glass full, that challenges how correct this model created by Gen AI will look like audience is going to be. What's the percent of this model prediction is going to be right? And that's, again, jury is still out, or not still, but soon going to be out as we start seeing more of application of synthetic panel. If you can rely on that, is it a 60% reliability, 70%, 50%? And then researchers going to adjust, and marketing folks going to adjust, say, hey, it's only 50-50, so do I want to rely on that in this particular case versus something we just exploring right now, and let's start from that because it doesn't require lots of resources and time, versus we need to really make a strategic decision which is going to define our company's next 3 years direction. Then people might pull back, say, no, let's actually conduct the actual research. But if those models will prove high reliability, 80-90%, maybe I would say above 70-75%, then we will see more widespread application of that approach. And those kind of defining points for me, reliability, that's the number one. I want to make sure I use the tool which I can rely on in my research.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. This concept of reliability, and I don't think we're there yet, but I feel like we will for sure get there. It's just a matter of when, right? Is it the next 12 months or is it the next 3 years? We'll see, because generative AI has issues right now, big issues. But I'm confident they'll be sorted out now when they're applied in a more scientific way to things like marketing research, market research. That's going to even take a little bit more time.
You're absolutely right. So because of the hallucination, because some other aspects, although, again, several players, they're really pushing on A, training and improving the Gen AI models, number one. And B, for me also, as a researcher, would be very important to finally solve for copyrights and intellectual property rights conundrum. Then those Gen AI models will be connected to actual current data like Google and stuff like that. And there are several players already in the market which offer some solutions like connectors and Gen AI to current data. So then it will become much more useful tool for all of us, because right now, as you know, it's been trained for 2 years ago, right? For 2021 or something like that, 2022. So you're still lagging, you have this lagging effect of a couple of years, which besides, yes, if it's a synthetic panel or helping you create initial draft, a discussion guide or quant survey, where it still would require human interaction and involvement, but at least to speed up the process. But if I wanted on everything on a certain topic, like let's say doing the secondary research or doing something related to current events, but I want to actually model some kind of in-depth interview idea, I will not be able to do that right now because of that connection is not, doesn't exist, excuse me. So again, those challenges needs to be solved for, right? So the model itself, the connection to actual and current data, and then we can see much wider usage of generative AI for our application, because definitely it's going to be and already being aimed and targeted and for usage of pretty much in the interaction like touch points when consumers go through touch points and interactions with our brands, journeys, like I told you before. So getting information from a company, interacting with the company. But for us, I think it still needs to, we still need to see some significant improvements in existing product or solution to rely more on that in our day-to-day jobs.
Agreed. Agreed. Well, Michael, believe it or not, we're already at the end of our time. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Big thank you for sharing your wealth of experience and insights with us. If people want to connect with you, I've been following you on LinkedIn. You've been sharing some of the great work that you do, which is great. It seems like it seems like you're able to publish your thought leadership. What's the best way to connect with you if people want to stay abreast of what you're doing there at Visa and in general?
Oh, I really appreciate it. And Mario, I just want to say I truly enjoyed our conversation as well. I see that you, like myself, one of the industry experts and especially subject matter expert on Gen Z and diversity in the United States. It's a very important topic for me. You can hear my Texas accent as well from St. Petersburg, Russia, regionally. So, but the best way to stay in touch with me, of course, via LinkedIn. I publish all of my work either via LinkedIn or some other social media sites. And I would love to hear from your audience. I would love to learn what people in our industry doing and their perspective on Gen AI and different generations and so, and how relevant what we discussed today to their work. So, and exchange opinions, because I love to learn from other people as well. So, that would be the best way, and they can either connect with me via LinkedIn, follow me on LinkedIn. So I think this is one of the best avenues besides X and other social media sites. So, but I'm really looking forward to staying in touch with you and your audience.
Likewise, Michael. Thanks again. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com. And follow us on social media.
You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform.